Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference 2023, April 23rd through the 28th, Nashville, Tennessee. The Gaylord at Opry, what a center, what a place. We have amazing speakers, amazing training, five of the most impactful days of your career. Check it out at streetcop.com. You do not want to miss out. There is a room code available for a discounted room. Sign up now at streetcop.com.
111. Be a street cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino. Today with me a special guest, as I typically say special guest. I got to get out of that habit of doing that. It's just a guest. Even though you're special in my eyes, I'm sure in your parents' eyes, you're a special man, Marlon Meracci. And I'll let him give you his 90-second bio of who he is and what we're going to talk about today. So thank you for being here, sir. Go for it.
Dennis, thank you. Good morning from sunny, scorching LA. My name is Marlon. I've been a police officer for 24 years with the Los Angeles Police Department. I'm a month into retirement. I was a sergeant from the last 15 years. Great, great career. Did a lot of assignments, but I specifically focus and have some expertise in a lot of police misconduct and discipline, which I'm sure we'll get into. So that's me. And thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And then Marlon reached out to us and wanted to come on because he thought he had a lot of information he could share with people about if you find yourself in the jackpot to try to help yourself out a little bit, some things to know. And I'm sure we're going to talk about things that are specific to California, but I think overall, there's probably some real good information we're going to get out of this regarding what cops need to know when they happen to find themselves in the jackpot, whether warranted or unwarranted, because we know there are times where motivations behind getting cops in trouble are not true and accurate. And I've been around long enough to see a lot of weird things happen. And sometimes they just dig up anything to make it stick to you. And sometimes it really is warranted. So let's go right into that. What are some things you want to start with as far as the disciplinary process and things to think about, maybe painting some scenarios, however you want to go with it?
First and foremost, I started realizing that getting into this training world, you know, definitely checking out all your training regimen and your courses and just in general. Over here in the West Coast, we also have a lot of private training. And the first thing I definitely want to say that training is a must. And I really do feel that we don't get enough. I mean, that's spot on in terms of, especially now. I mean, you can see with the shortage, you know, there's not even enough candidates to even get into a police academy for one. Two, that's a major challenge. You're just working your ass off. You know, you're working a whole bunch of overtime. And, you know, so then you ask yourself, even command staff or whoever, when can we train these people to make them better, you know, to have best practices? So I felt that a lot of the training that was being offered didn't really touch or focus into police discipline, which is really, really important. It's important for several reasons. One, it's the fact that cops don't really know when it is this whole process, when internal affairs, you know, gets involved. And you know, this is from experience. They think that we're the enemy, you know, you're the rat squad, and we're really, really out to get you. What they don't realize is that, I'll give you an example. In Los Angeles, when I was in internal affairs, we averaged north of 3,000 citizen complaints. And that's not even talking internal, but just in general, public complaints, maybe even internal as well. However, and I'm giving you a stat probably back in 2016, 2015, 96.4 of all those complaints come back unfounded. What that tells you is the majority of these complaints that, you know, the public makes, you know, community members, citizens, whatever the case may be, really have no backbone. You know, it's pretty fraudulent, you know, because cops really do what they're supposed to do when they're told what to do, you know. So in that sense, you really have to worry about that 4%. So that 4% is what you really have to concentrate, you know, really hone in on. And so I just feel as though the public or these young officers don't really know what the process is like, you know, which I have a really good way to explain the process that, hey, it's really fair. My theory has always been no stone goes unturned. And the problem that we have, unfortunately, is that the IO, whoever, you know, the investigation gets assigned to, doesn't really have that mentality. That could be because, who knows, maybe they're lazy. Maybe they're just not that competent. Maybe they're not, you know, they probably just don't investigate well. So then what happens is that you turn in a poor quality complaint. And once you turn that into command staff for all the levels review, then comes a whole different gamut of, you know, biases, egos, and it gets personal, you know. So that, in a sense, I feel as though young cops or the public as well needs to be really aware of, you know, what this process is like.
Do you think that there are more complaints filed in LA because of the anti-cop sentiment, and they're almost pushed? I feel like I hear this from a lot of California cops specifically, like, you guys might be appreciated everywhere else, but we're not here. People don't like us, like the police here. On the East Coast, you could find a little bit of that, but overall the cops are very much appreciated in the Northeast of the United States, no question about it. And probably in a far majority of the states. So do you think that's kind of something that's super specific to the liberal area, anti-cop sentiment of Los Angeles?
Yes, in a sense that it is kind of led by, you know, some demographic component to it, meaning, you know, we have over 22 divisions, 22 plus, including traffic divisions here in Los Angeles, right, in LAPD. I live in the San Fernando Valley. In the San Fernando Valley itself, there's 7 divisions. I can tell you, because I've lived here and I've patrolled here in my own streets, they're very supportive of cops. A lot, not lately. You know, lately when I say, and you know this, just ever since, you know, the George Floyd incident and the defunding and, you know, the re-imaging and all that, it just completely took a whole 180 degrees, you know. And what makes it even worse, and you know this, is that 24, 25 years ago when I came on, to actually ambush and really think about going after and killing a cop, that is just beyond me. You know, so those are the issues that are presented in today's, you know, young cops and policing. But if you start talking about South LA, the LA part, that's a whole different culture. I mean, you'll get, you know, liberal or not, they just, you know, the movements, people just like to make complaints. Luckily, we have a policy with body worn video, what we call demonstrably false, which means that you can actually make the complaint, but then I try to tell internal affairs and some command staff that, look, even though you're going to cut the face sheet and do a complaint and it's going to be demonstrably false, there's got to be a better way to streamline that. Why don't we just, like, you know, listen to you and go watch body worn video? Don't even create a file number or nothing, because once you push the button to create a file number, it's going to end up in your jacket, man. It's going to end up in your folder. Why can't we just say, hey, we'll get back to you in a couple of days, go review some body worn video, call them back up and say, hey, you know what, whatever it is that you were complaining about, it's completely false, it's fraudulent. And, you know, we don't appreciate you making these type of complaints. So unless you have anything else to say to me, have a nice day, you know, and hang up the phone. But we don't do that.
On that accord, were there repercussions from LAPD for filing fraudulent complaints? And I'll even go one step further and say, fraudulent in the sense where they're trying to really implicate somebody in a criminal act. I'm not saying fraudulent where they misinterpreted something. I'm saying they're saying that this happened, it's completely false, and they're accusing the cop of something criminal. Are you guys taking action against them legally?
At one point, the city attorney did discuss the angle of, you know, having some fraudulent criminal repercussions, so to speak. It's too political. It never
crazy. They want to protect the criminals in LA, right? That's the game.
Right. But when I was a defense rep, and here's a little bit of a war story. I had a motor officer who I defended, I represented in his internal affairs interview, who did a traffic stop and asked the driver to come out. They cited him for a moving violation, whatever the case may be. Right. Lucky him, he recorded the whole thing, because back then, I'm taking you back like 2008, 2007. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, he made a complaint against the officer and claimed that they took him out of the car, that he was rude, disrespectful, started throwing F-bombs and threw him up against the wall, shoved him up against the car, a host of stuff. So we did the interview, you know, we turned it in, it got adjudicated as unfounded. He gets served. So what does he do? He goes and files in small claims, malicious prosecution. Ultimate fine, I think it's $7,500. I'm sorry, it's $750. And sure enough, no representation in small claims. So he went, no legal representation, I should say. So himself, subpoena the violator, the complainant, and then put in front of the judge. And the judge is just like, are you serious? Do you have any other type of evidence? He's all, well, I got my complaint. I got the adjudication. I got the letter and transmittal. I have it all right here. And then the judge says, you have anything else? He said, yeah, I tape recorded the traffic stop. She goes, let me listen to it. And sure enough, so he did. So he was awarded and won. And basically, I think he donated the money to some foundation for police officers. So my point of the whole story is that there is that angle. There is that avenue of doing a malicious prosecution that a lot of people just don't follow.
What is the department's position on doing that? Are they going to really be, I mean, even now, are they going to be, you're asking for trouble by bringing people who are filing false complaints to small claims court?
No, I just don't, you know, Dennis, I just don't think that cops, we don't promote it enough. We don't market that enough. It's all off duty. You know, look, there's so many demonstrably false. That's what I was getting to, you know, body worn video. Hey, well, you know, demonstrably false, you completely lied. So have a nice day. But still, that takes like 2 or 3 months to even get that done. You know, there is no other way of streamlining. So to answer your question, I would imagine if, I guess myself or that's just it, the department doesn't really promote anything to really help, you know, and maintain a good, you know, a healthy relationship with the officers. We just don't. And unfortunately, you know, we're so caught up with working so much, even in my old unit officer rep section, which is a whole bunch of defense reps, you know, they don't have time to do it. You know how cops are. They just, hey man, you know, we're done. It's unfounded. You know, I go, you know, I got to go, man. I got to go do some work.
Yeah. And you know what? I think some of it falls on the agency and maybe the district attorney's office to put people in a position to know that if you file a false complaint, and it's not just a misinterpretation of law or what was right and what was wrong, an actual allegation of criminal misconduct, there are going to be repercussions. And I've actually seen it. My old agency, I'll give them credit. I remember they would say they weren't going to do it. And there was one thing in particular that happened, and our boss, the big guy up top, said, you know, we're going to move forward with criminal prosecution and charges for this guy for, I forgot what it was, but completely false allegation. And it was a serious allegation as well. And they ended up arresting and charging. If you Googled it enough, you probably find it because I remember it made the paper. But it sets a precedent like, hey, listen, listen, complain when it's justified. We certainly want to hear it, but you're not going to come in here and just start making stuff up about cops because you didn't like that you did something wrong and there were repercussions for your actions. We're not going to tolerate it.
Right. And let me touch on something that we did launch that it's not too popular or hasn't been really promoted as much as police mediation. I actually launched a bias policing mediation program in 2014, where if you make a minor type of complaint, you know, hey, when you pulled me over, you were real, real rude. What we'll do is voluntarily, we'll ask the violator or the complainant to do a face-to-face. If you're interested in doing a face-to-face mediation with the city attorney's very well-trained certified mediator, you know, you're more than welcome to come and, you know, let the officer know how you feel about the particular stop and so be it. Normally, you know, you'll get them to do it. And then the officers, that's part of the culture, part of cop culture, you know, then I don't want to go in there and say, I'm sorry. However, after explaining, and if they knew Marlon, because once you get that email, it says internal affairs, they're like, I don't want to have nothing to do with you. But if you knew Marlon, you know, you'll listen. And then I tell them, I say, hey, look, it's not going to be in your jacket. You're not going to go through a full-blown bias policing, you know, type of investigation, which is like, I mean, it's like treating like a friggin', you know, first degree murder investigation. You're asked, I mean, it doesn't feel good. And you know this when you get interviewed by IA, you know, you're guilty and you got to go through the Liebarger and a whole bunch of stuff. Anyhow, the advantage, the carrot for you is it won't go on your jacket and it'll be completely closed in a matter of days, just as long as you do it. If you sign that confidentiality agreement, you're more than welcome, Commander. But here's the deal. The department, no stakeholders or myself will ever ask you to go in there and say, I'm sorry. But what you have an opportunity is to go in there and let Mr. Johnson know, hey, this is the reason why I pulled you over. All right. If you think that I pulled you over because of your race, you got it all wrong. You had tinted windows like a mile that I was following you, you know, and you were going like 65 and a 35, you know, and I'm just giving you an example. And so what happens is that at times you get impasse, but more than anything, they have an understanding. And that actually worked. It was supposed to be a pilot program for 3 years. I want to say we did north of 100 referrals, and we did about 30 to 40% success rate. And as we speak, Dennis, it's up and running, man. So it's been what, 8-9 years. And now it gets to the point where cops are actually emailing back the coordinator. So I was the one who launched it and I brokered that deal. You actually have cops emailing you saying, hey, I want to go to mediation. I want to go to mediation, you know, so they can get it over and done with. And it's pretty successful. I know that there's probably maybe a handful of agencies that have somewhat of a, you know, mediation type of program for cops where you can come together one-on-one and, you know, and by the way, just so you know, it's all voluntary. So if you don't want to do it, then, you know, then you don't, then you just go through a full blown investigation.
Do you have context outside of the LAPD on what a supportive command staff looks like? And if so, would you consider during your time at the LAPD that the command staff was supportive? And by the way, if you don't want to answer that, that's not a problem. I don't want you to rub people the wrong way. But when I hear this, I think about like the pandering to the public that essentially is the problem. I get you got to try to quell this, but you know, I'm curious what the position is on the command staff of like, why weren't they just saying like, if they're not right, if they're not wrong, then let's just clear these guys. You know, why this, like we all around the country hear this California bullshit all the time. You know, on top of that, and like Oregon and Washington and these fucked up places that you guys have to like literally just continue to do this dog and pony show and the dance to appease the public, where maybe you see something like Wayne Ivey in Florida, who will acknowledge complaints, or Grady Judd, but you'll or David Clark or Mark Lamb from Pinal County, Arizona, where they're just like, we're not fucking doing backflips for you guys. This is the job. We looked into it. We know this is the law. This is what it means. So do you think a lot of these things were in place and it's just like because of the lack of support from maybe even political support or upper command?
Absolutely. 100% spot on. We just don't do that, man. You know what? We're, you know, we're soft like that. Soft in the sense that, you know, you just won't tell someone to go pound sand. They don't, you know, you can't pick up the phone or someone walks in the front desk and say, you know what, you got it all wrong. Have a nice day.
Look, I get there's some kind of culpability or aspect that you might miss one in the interim. I'm saying, yeah, look into it, you know, but if it's completely frivolous, why are they still doing backflips for these people? Especially if you get somebody who's a continuous complainer. I'm sure you get the same repeat customers coming through the door trying to work the system.
Yes.
What does the command staff say? We are not spending any more resources, police time. We've got people getting murdered in the streets and we're in here playing fucking games with these people.
Yeah.
And taking our police resources and we got to entertain this bullshit. And unfortunately, you know, the country looks at California, like I said, and they're just like, God, that looks terrible. And you'll actually see command staff who actually have spines and stand up and stand firm and with good political backing that I don't want to say they tell people to go pound sand, but they're firm. You know, and they're famous for those things and people like appreciate that people. And let's face it, most citizens of this country in the United States, I would say even argue well above 99% either aren't bothered by the police or appreciate the police. And it's this 1% that all these fucking commanders and these leaders, quote unquote, right.
Yeah.
Are doing backflips for because they don't know what to do. They're scared. They're scared of the position. They're selfish. It's not them. So who gives a shit? There's a lot of problems involved with this.
A lot. And it's unfortunately, it's all political. Just like you said, I mean, our, you know, 5-panel police commission member pretty much kind of runs the show. And the problem is that you get a couple in there that are, you know, pretty liberal and, you know, really, really feel this though. And that's just it, Dennis. Look, we have a zero tolerance for misconduct or complaints. And that's been going on for like, fuck, man, 15 years. Right. And that stat that I gave you was back in 2014, 15, dude, I can only imagine it's in the 90s. Look, if you're talking about 3,000 plus complaints and you're getting over a 90% unfounded rate, what does that tell you? Yeah. It should tell you that, you know what, you should take
you're doing something wrong.
Two steps forward. Yeah. You know what the chief, well, you know, the problem is, you know, I mean, we're 90, well, not now, but we used to be 9,700, 9,800 strong. I mean, if I'm telling you we have over 80 captains, you can only imagine we have so many commanders, so many deputy chiefs, 4 assistant chiefs and the chief. So the problem is that everybody looks to the top of the pyramid. So whatever he or she does, in our case, you know, our chief, it pretty much goes. No one wants to go against the grain. That's the other problem. That's the other problem with
because
there's misconduct,
retribution
with the relationships and taking care of your cops.
You sure there's retribution. They're going to cut. I mean, it's only you watch these guys. It's only a matter of time before they get to the union guy. They get an opportunity to go after the union guy who's trying to represent the people and doing what he's supposed to do. And command gets them on one thing, and they're going to take it and make it into the ticket, a snowball, make it into a fucking boulder.
Exactly. Just to give an example in terms of our levels of review, just to adjudicate one IA complaint. When you turn it in, I'll always say that you have six hands in the cookie jar. You have the captain one and the captain three, your division. Then you have Bureau, which is your commander, your deputy chief. They weigh in on it. Then it goes to internal affairs and you have your commander, your deputy chief of internal affairs. They weigh in on it as well. And guess what? Out of all those, they have to go to the 10th floor and sell it. Now, I just pretty much explained to you what formally, you know, by policy and procedure that you're supposed to do, but we don't know who else is weighing in to adjudicate this particular complaint. So I've seen things go from, hey, I want to send this dude to a board of rights. It goes all the way to the top. Nah, just give him paper penalty, give him an official reprimand. Not a big deal, right? Or I've seen things start from an OR and they ended up going to a fucking board of rights. But here's the problem, which is one of the reasons I never wanted to be in command staff, because I care too much about my partners and, you know, and my colleagues. It's just this. If you on the first level as a captain tell that officer, you know what, this is just going to be, you know, I'm an unfounded, or you know what, it's just going to be paper penalty. Well, guess what? You got directed to go to a board of rights. So the question now is, are you, hey, I need a character witness. Are you going to come in to testify before the board in front of two command staff officers and a civilian, which is one choice of your panel member, and let them know exactly what it is that you thought, you know, how you adjudicated and what factors you took in consideration, and, you know, and put your reputation on the line, you know, and a lot of them, unfortunately, bro, they won't.
Yeah. That's we have a word for people like that, but I'm not going to get into it, but it typically describes.
Yeah. And small agencies, you know what, the good thing about small agencies, well, it's not so much that it's good, which is part of my, you know, one of the reasons I retired, part of one of the consulting services that I like to do is, it's just that scenario, Dennis. You and I both know you have that one police officer that's bitching. It's got that ancillary duty of, you know, SWAT. It's got great looking hair, just like you, you know, all slick, you know, and everybody loves him. I mean, this guy's fucking fire. This guy's awesome. So he does that traffic stop and he just fucking goes off and drops F-bombs, completely rude, all on body worn video, right? So, you know, they cut a face sheet, they do an IA, and, you know, the officer's going to call his union to get representation. The department's going to grab a sergeant to be the IO. He's going to do a full-fledged investigation, interview everybody, you know, canvas the area, grab some evidence, put in an addenda, summarize the entire investigation, paraphrase some statements, and he or she is going to turn it in. Okay, cool. Now it goes to the levels of review. Well, the chief, right, is sitting there going, you know what? Fuck that. I cannot have my officers just dropping F-bombs and being fucking rude and disrespectful to my community members. That's not going to happen. I want to jam this dude up. But you got command staff saying, you know, you got the lieutenant, the sergeant, and then, well, hey, Cap, you know what? He's a good dude. You know, he's, you know, hey, why don't we just give him a counseling? You know, and just call it a day, right? Of course, the chief's like kind of hot under the collar saying, no, I want to do it. But, you know, the chief is handcuffed because he or she cannot go against their command staff. So he says, all right, fuck it. You know what? I'll agree. That's that one police officer that happens a lot. I'm sure you've seen that. The other one is the one that has that horrible reputation, right? That bad reputation where he's badge heavy, always being rude, just off the hinges all the time on a traffic stop or a radio call. And he gets that one discourtesy complaint, that one allegation of discourtesy or neglect of duty, whatever the case may be, it gets turned in. And now everybody's saying, all levels of review are saying, you know what? This is the guy. This is the one we're going to jam up and just go ahead and fire him. So what I like to do is, as part of a service for a fee, why don't you just send me the entire file? Send me the entire investigation. I will review this, analyze and examine this with a fine tooth comb, soup to nuts, because you're not going to get any bias. You're not going to get any favoritism, no nepotism. And what you're going to get from me is a complete, reasonable, fair, and impartial recommendation. I might even tell you your investigation sucks, kick it back to the IO, and, you know, I need some more information. And then I turn it into the chief and say, hey, chief, you know what? I'm not telling you what to do, but look, if you're going to sustain this, this is the penalty, you know, I would recommend based on my training experience. And if you're going to unfound it, then you're good to go, you know, something along those lines. So we'll see what happens. But my target audience, my clients, it's definitely going to be small agencies, because in small agencies, it happens a lot.
Well, I think I will professionally beg to differ just a hair. I think the big agencies certainly are plagued. And when I say big agencies, I'm going to say agencies that work in these Democratic liberal run cities. No question about it. New York City, Philadelphia. I'm not saying there's not good command staff in those places, but we typically see the pandering to the public. There's now all of a sudden it's getting real popular to stand up and stand up for the cops and get the fuck out of here, these people, right? Like, you're just such a flip-flop piece of shit. And I always tell people, stand firm your ground during the times when it's rough, and you will be looked at as a leader when it's over, because it's always going to be over at some point. Stand firm. Just stick to your guns. You're not going to pander to these people. But, you know, look at a guy like Wayne Ivey from Florida, Sheriff Wayne Ivey. I mean, he oversees 1,700 employees. That's not a small agency.
No, it's not.
I have friends that oversee 1,000-person agencies. I know it's not 8,000 or like NYPD, 30,000. All right, let's move on past that a little bit.
Yes.
Let's say, you know, you said you think it's fair that internal affairs the way they act, but do you think you're saying, and this is not me trying to be a pessimist, I'm trying to give you an opportunity to explain the position, because I know you're a good dude, and I'm trying to get into the mind of the listener who's understanding and maybe yelling at the podcast going, that's not fucking true, blah, blah, blah. So that's why I ask these questions, because I'm not,
of course,
I'm around a long time, right? You're, this is sort of my 22nd year, you did 24, we're not far off. I started in 01, you started in 99, I'm guessing 98?
That's correct, 98, 99.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, 99, I graduated high school. I couldn't have been qualified for the police academy yet, but, you know, you say that it's fair, but would you agree, and I hate to do this lawyer shit to you, that there are internal affairs divisions who aren't fair?
Oh yeah. By all means. I mean, look, my experience comes a lot from just being an advocate and being pretty much putting on cases for border rights. The problem that I have with this, that assignment, is that the quality of the investigation is just fucking shitty as hell. That's part of the problem. We're supposed to be, you know, the best, or you're supposed to hire the best, in terms of no stone goes unturned, bro. Don't be lazy. Just be, you know, you came here, you know, we get weekends off, and, you know, you got that flex work schedule. Do what's right by the cop. You know, but I will tell you this, Dennis, in my experience, is that for the most part, when you do something on duty, the department's pretty forgiving. I will say that. I can tell you that, but just listening to these panel members, because think about it. If you have two command staff officers and a civilian at this border rights process, right? You got a captain, maybe two captains, just on the average, you're probably going to have about 40 years of experience, you know? So a lot of the shit that they're hearing, they're like, dude, you know, I remember I did that. My partner did this and that. So a lot of it is just like, okay, really? Do we really have to hear all this shit for a fucking neglect of duty, right? So of course, the best bang for your buck, and this is what's very important, is that false statement. False and misleading statements. Look, you and I can agree, we don't want no fucking liars. We don't, you know? And that's what the process is really all about. We don't want no liars. We don't want people misleading and, you know, saying, fuck, you know, and maybe I was here, maybe I was there. We don't want people doing some fraudulent report writing or, you know, perjuring themselves in court, you know, getting charged with domestic violence, whatever the case may be. That's what you're there for, because that's what cops want. Cops want to be around good cops. And unfortunately, you know, there is some bad apples. Now, out of the 30 plus border rights that I've done, I want to say about a handful were legitimate, like really, like, you know what, you fucking lied.
You gotta go. Yeah, you
gotta get out of here. We're removing, you know. Now, what happens to the other 25 plus that I've done? The first thing command staff looks at me when I'm cleaning up, putting all my shit away in the box, they're looking at me going, dude, Marlon, did anybody fucking think about settling this? I'm like, hey, man, I'm just a sergeant too, you know, sir. I mean, you know, what do you want me to do? He's all, because we sat here for 3 or 4 days, listened to a whole bunch of fucking testimony. I mean, all this, basically what they're trying to say is that you're really wasting my time, because I need to go run my fucking command, you know, and not be here and listen to a whole bunch of BS. So with that being said, yes, unfortunately, what I will tell you is, unfortunately, it does get personal. And you know this. Somewhere along the lines of the levels of review, someone has an ego and someone takes it personal and says, you know what? Forget about this process. Forget about what's right. You know what? Fuck that. I used to work with them. Fucking give them 5 days, you know, something along those lines, you know.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, and you're supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to police your own, man. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's just kind of shitty and we don't get there.
Yeah. I mean, like, right. If we're standing up as a constitutional institution, protecting people's rights and making sure we don't violate people's rights, fair and impartial seems to be two words that are supposed to be ringing true. And I'll even say this, man. I'm saying outside of the law enforcement profession, I know that there are people who do not get fair and impartial treatment in the judicial system. It's very clear as day. And it is not. You know, I always think about, I had a guy one time in the group, in the Facebook group that we have. I said, you know, I was explaining reasonable suspicion and how it's measured in a courtroom. Uh-huh. And I said, you would think that there was some standard test for reasonable suspicion and it should be completely objective. But the reality is it's very subjective because you find yourself in one courtroom determining reasonable suspicion level. Did you have it? And a judge is saying, yeah, here's the four things you cited. We found that you had reasonable suspicion. You could bring that exact case to another courtroom in a more liberal area where the judge doesn't like the police, which is not uncommon. And they'll say, you didn't have enough. Right. Even show up with three more items, they'll say you didn't have enough. So why is it good in one court in the same state, but it's not good in another? And, you know, this is typical what state police have to go through. You know, you get troopers who literally will stay away from certain counties.
Oh, wow.
Because they want their cases to stick. They think people who have broken the law, especially at significant levels, should be penalized in some sense. And they know that if they get a job within the confines of certain counties and they could work maybe even like a mile out of their, you know, into their beat, that's where they stay. They don't even go like Baltimore County. Those guys stay the fuck away from Baltimore County. That's true. They just avoid it like the plague.
Wow.
Because they don't want to bring any cases before the judges in Baltimore County. They are so criminal sympathetic.
Wow.
And I just, yeah, it's just wild.
It drives you nuts. You know what? Cop culture, as you know this, you know, what do they call that? Organizational culture. Yeah, it's cop culture. Kind of dictates a lot of what you do. I'd be the first one to tell you, look, out of 22 divisions, same thing happens in terms of culture. A neglected duty here in the San Fernando Valley and Club Dev is like, yeah, you know, paper penalty. We'll just give you an OR. But a neglected duty in South LA, no, dude, you're going to get, take a hit, take a 1 day suspension.
Yeah.
And don't mind sounding like a lawyer, man. You know, I actually just took the California bar exam 3 weeks ago. So
congrats, man. That's a good question. That's a lead into my next question. So I want to just advocate this. It's as an internal affairs division officer, it is your job to work on behalf of the cop just as much as the person who's complaining if there's sustained complaint, right? It's your job to find the truth, not to fucking find what the bosses want. It's what the truth is. Now, we're stating that we agree on it. And Marlon, it's clear as day that you care enough to get on here and try to advise the Bill of Rights. You're obviously going to be, I'm guessing, doing defense work for law enforcement. Is that where okay.
Oh, absolutely.
So how important, and this is very, very comical to me, and I'll tell you, so I've mentioned this before in the podcast, but how important is it for a internal affairs? I would even argue that it's one step above the importance of all of the police officers to know what the case law of your state says regarding search and seizure, if we're talking about things like that. How important is it for an internal affairs division officer to know? And I'll give you California because they don't deviate from the Fourth Amendment, but Fourth Amendment search and seizure.
Barry, I know that a lot. So we have we used to have a criminal and an admin side. How important? It's got to be of the greatest importance, which is part of the reason why we had, I think at one point we had a constitutional policing unit, which basically focuses right into exactly what you're saying. Look, do these guys have enough PC that have enough reasonable suspicion to actually pull this guy over? And in my experience, not so much of those issues, because those pretty much go with the flow. I mean, cops in general, here in LA, man, we're good. Well, we're good everywhere. You know, we can always use more training, obviously. You know, there's a lot of case law and updates, but in my experience, to be honest with you, Dennis, I haven't seen much constitutional, you know, Fourth Amendment search and seizure, you know, to be exact, issues where cops have been brought up, you know, on those type of charges. The majority of the serious allegations normally, from my experience, is always off duty. That off duty stuff is the worst, especially even in an OIS, which is something we can get into later. As a defense rep, I rolled out to numerous of these old officer involved shootings where, you know, representation is needed because we compel officers to tell, hey, dude, tell me what happened. You know, so that's a whole different process. But with that being said, even if you get involved in an off-duty OIS, what standards do you use? That's the problem, right? I mean, you don't have a uniform, you don't have the resources necessary to de-escalate. You can't judge that as clear and accurate as you can if you were on duty. And so all that off-duty behavior becomes, I mean, the scope, bro, is so, so friggin' narrow, and they'll jam you up. And, you know, that's where you start saying, you know what, I don't think you're even fit to be a cop, man. And you're going to have to get removed, you know. But for the most part, even if there is some Fourth Amendment issues, for example, you know, there's a lot of training to do. It's pretty forgiving. But to jam someone up completely for, you know, what you may believe had enough reasonable suspicion for you to actually stop that vehicle or do that search, whatever, plain view doctrine, et cetera. Those kind of issues, the department's pretty forgiving.
I was a young man, and one of my very good friend's father was a state trooper here in the state of New Jersey. And I was picking his brain. I wanted to be a cop so bad. I didn't know any other cops. I mean, when I found out he was my friend for a while, and I found his father was a trooper, I mean, I was fucking pumped because I had somebody to talk to. I really wanted to be a cop. I didn't really have anybody. I didn't know anybody in my family was a cop. I maybe a little bit of friendship here and there with some cops. And I remember him saying to me, he goes, you know, nobody ever gets in trouble on duty. It's always off duty. Every single time you're going to lose your job, it's going to be an off-duty incident. And I think it's a really valid thing to talk about right now. And I'll start by saying, hearing that and knowing that, and I'm not pretending to hide the culture of law enforcement and what cops do with their off-duty time. And that is, and I'm sure everybody else, but is drinking heavily.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll acknowledge that that is 100% true. And that is when people get themselves in trouble. You know, we just got marijuana legalized in New Jersey. I know you guys have legalized there. Did you know that cops, according to our attorney general guideline, are allowed to use marijuana?
Wow.
And you know, what's interesting is you say that, and I said this in a class I had last Monday in Minneapolis. I said, you know, it's crazy, but let's just think about the other side of it. I get it. That's the devil's cabbage. The worst thing that's ever happened to the world. But what I say to people is, you got a squad of 9 guys going to a Kenny Chesney concert, tailgating and drinking a fucking keg of beer in the back of an F-150, right? And then driving home or getting into a domestic or getting into a fight at that concert. Like, what's the worst thing to happen if they sat around hitting a bong? Like, your fingers are too orange from the Cheetos you were eating? So as nuts as it sounds, like, how do we justify drinking right, 14 White Claws and 16 shots of Jägermeister, but smoking weed where you're not going to fight anybody, you're going to sit there and just veg out, is so significantly more detrimental. And brother, I'm not a weed sympathizer. I'm a realist.
Yes.
You know, so I got this.
And you're
speaking,
you
get hurt on duty, you've got to go to pain management. You get any kind of boo-boos now, they're getting you on prescription heroin as fast as possible. I don't know if they dialed it back, but they're ready to give you Percocet and all this other shit. So I would you rather get a Percocet or I don't know, what's oxycodone?
Yeah.
Or OxyContin?
Yeah.
And then I know 4 cops that lost their jobs because they got hooked to narcotic analgesics. And once they cut them off, these guys went for heroin. And they're cops?
Yeah. No, I have a couple too. I've represented a couple.
Yeah. And like, you know, then it's in, fuck these guys, they're scumbags.
Oh, yeah.
You think that they were that bad? They're a different physiology than you are. Maybe you were able to kick it, but they weren't. Where's the end? What kind of pain were they in? You know, I know a guy who got a significant car crash. What a nice guy. I mean, significant. This dude had trauma for days. I can't imagine the pain he was in.
I can only imagine.
And dude, he ended up getting addicted to heroin. I remember going into headquarters and he was handcuffed to the bench and he's a cop in the next town over. And that's
wow,
like not some shit you see here, bro. Like it's not a thing that we do in Jersey. I just, you know, I had so much compassion for him. I didn't shun him. I just said, dude, I'm so sorry that this ended up being your story. And, you know, he kept in touch and he's like, he moved away, went to a different field, the whole nine, but he was a good dude. He told me this. He's like, bro, I got addicted to these pills. They got after this crash. I couldn't live without them. My body needed them. I don't know what to say. I tried to rehab twice. I couldn't get off of these goddamn pills.
Yeah. And the department's just not forgiving that way at all. You're right. Our department too. My beloved LAPD, zero tolerance. I don't care what federal or state ordinance or city ordinance you have. You know what? You're getting jammed up. You're getting fired.
I get it.
Listen, zero tolerance.
Look, if
but Chad, you can drink a lot and, you know, and
yeah,
and
right. Go, like we call it a substance thing or just particular substances. Right. So like if it's a substance thing.
Oh, yeah.
All right. But you know, I want to remind people that this is where cops get in trouble. I'm telling you, the drinking, the alcohol, put yourself in an environment where it's going to be safe. You're not going to put yourself in a position to drink and drive. You're going to have a plan laid out. You know, this is really
alcohol related incidents will definitely get you. It used to be a day where we actually, believe it or not, we actually had contracts, you know, and of course, you know, how they were treating contracts. I'm thinking, wait a minute, I took contracts law school and it's supposed to be, you know, in good faith, and they don't sign this contract or else, you know, you're going to go to a border rights. I actually got a call from one of my buddies who got a DUI, and I'm sitting here with my family on Christmas Eve, just drinking away, having a good time with my family. And he calls me like at 8 at night. He's like, "Hey bro, the captain has called me in the office and specifically told me that if I don't sign this contract, he's going to send me to a border rights. You work right now as an advocate putting boards. Is it true?" I'm going, "Fuck no, dude. Hell no. As a matter of fact, don't even think about signing that fucking contract. As a matter of fact, what I will tell you is fuck the contract and tell them to direct you to a board. Well, here's the challenge. The challenge is just go back into your professional inquiry and say, hey, you know what, sir, let me, you know, discuss this with my attorney. I really don't have the time to be, you know, I want to review this entire contract. It's okay with you. Maybe Monday or Tuesday, I can, you know, whatever." Right. And so me and the attorney, you know, we tried real hard to convince him to send it to a board of rights, because guess what? At a board of rights, there's no contract. There's no contract. And when I say contract, Dennis, I'm talking like some of them had these conditions where you can't go to 7-Eleven. You can't go to the grocery store, because the minute you are real close to fucking liquor, guess what? That's a violation. So the conditions were completely unfair. One, two, some of them had expirations. Someone said, okay, the next 3 years. Someone was said indefinite.
Wow.
And here's, yeah, it was horrible. It's so bad that internal affairs even monitor. So in other words, if you worked at one division and for whatever reason you got promoted, you know, went to another division and got transferred, well, how are you supposed to monitor these conditions if he already left? It was a fucking mess. They created an entire mess to the point where they actually said, you know what, enough of contracts. So they had to revise on a meet and greet, meet and confer with, you know, all stakeholders. And actually now you have alcohol related incidents where it tells you, like on a, you know, it's kind of like a bail sheet. Your first offense, you're going to get these many days suspension. Your second offense, you're looking at a board being, you know, termination being recommended, so on and so forth. But yeah, that probably wasn't the smartest thing to do in terms of alcohol related issues. So I just thought I'd share that with you.
Let's go into a few things of what to know if you're targeted for an investigation. And the first question I have for you is, because I don't want to leave it super broad, a lot of people think they can turn to a rep, a union rep. And I got to tell you, I warn people, you know, typically, and I'm not trying to sound like a dick, and I know that union reps, you know, have your best interest at stake, but it doesn't mean the most qualified person to go into an internal affairs deposition with you. So, you know, people are like, I says go get a rep. You want me to get the guy on squad 11, who's the biggest mope, who hasn't done police work in fucking 19 years, but gets the 2 weeks off to go to the Bahamas on the FOP or PBA's dime. You know, he's the guy who sells tickets at the cigar event. He don't know a fucking thing about police work or what the even SOP. Bro, I've got into it and I'm like, I'm telling the command staff, I'm like, you don't even know what the SOPs say.
Yeah.
You guys are saying this. It's actually not even true. The contract, you can't read, you don't even know how to read a contract. So what's your thoughts on somebody who's a rep versus maybe an attorney if you're entitled to get an attorney?
You know what? Definitely an attorney. As if you're describing the type of rep in the East Coast, then no, you got to go for an attorney. Luckily, us, we have an officer rep section that I did two tours. You know, it's where I got all my 12 years plus of experience in disciplinary. We actually train. We're specifically trained every week we go to legal, we sit with the attorneys, you know, inside counsel, and we go over a host of stuff. So you're going to get a very qualified, you know, representation from actual LAPD. We have a unit itself. But for the most part, yes, you have to get someone who is not only looking for your best interest, who actually loves this shit. They really do. You really got to have compassion to really help cops out, because you and I both know this is a service that is so needed. And the problem is that not a lot of officers know about this particular type of service. You got to know your Peace Officers Bill of Rights. I'm sure Jersey either has.
Well, you got to know what you're entitled to, right?
So like, you got to know, I'll give you a perfect example. If you, let's just say today, right now, watch commander, you know, gets a phone call saying, hey, you know what? The squad called over here was doing A, B, and C, and, you know, they jammed this dude up and, you know, he's excessive force, whatever the case may be, right? Well, next thing you know, whether he's liked or not liked, that's a whole different story. But they start doing what I call that, you know, you got to go on a fact-finding mission, which is fine. You're supposed to do that, right? But here's the deal. You can't be coming up to the alleged accused employees, the officers, and start fucking jamming them up. Can't do that. Can't do that at all. It's part of your rights. What you can do is, number one, you got to know your threshold line, and you got to know what kind of questions you're going to actually ask, you know, the accused employee, the alleged, whatever the allegations may be. But you can't, because that's a major, major violation. So that in it itself, you have to know, and it happens a lot. So if you don't get a rep, right, that is really familiar with these type of procedures, these types of, you know, practices, then you're going to get a shitty investigation, and you're going to get jammed up because your representation was not competent, you know? So that's part of the problem, you know, crossing the threshold, knowing what to ask. Because if you and I right now were, you know, in the streets and, you know, we get called in the watch commander's office and the fucking watch commander's just fucking firing away, asking all kinds of, whoa. First of all, you know, are you alleging that I did some shit, some misconduct? And if he says yes, you know, stop. I don't have to speak to you anymore. You know, what are you telling me? Well, I'm telling you that, you know what? Someone made an allegation for neglect of duty and discourtesy. All right. Thank you. Have a nice day. Then you're going to get an email from internal affairs, set up the interview, get compelled, and call it a day. So I think that lacks. I think your union reps, and I don't know, maybe this is the culture in the East Coast. I can only speak for, you know, my agency and a lot of agencies here in Southern California, where we're very, very good at representation. Because
you have to be, right? Because you got to get that shit right all the time. At least here, I got to be honest with you, at least here, there's not a big anti-police sentiment. So we're not there. Listen, and people who are in the mix are jaded, but compared to you guys on the West Coast, we are not under constant fucking barrages of not being able to do our job. But we get it wrong too.
Yeah, I just got retained 2 months ago as a witness expert for a wrongful termination case. You're going to laugh at this. This is a medical examiner investigator out of the coroner's office in Northern California. To make the long story short, they jammed this dude up and they railroaded him and they fired him. The IO was a civilian from a public utilities commission or something along those lines, some entity. And guess what? They conducted the entire investigation. They did a whole bunch of stuff, brought him up on some serious allegations to the point they even called him a liar and they fired him. But guess what? They did not realize that he had peace officer's powers and he was post-certified. So they violated all kinds of POVA rights, Peace Officer's Bill of Rights Act. So my classmate, actually my law school classmate, he was a deputy sheriff in LA County, became a lawyer. He practices out in San Bernardino and he calls me up and goes, hey man, I got something right up your alley, you know, because my expertise is, as you can tell, it's very narrow. It's very, you know, the scope is very narrow.
As it should be, right? When you're an attorney, you should be in one space. Yeah. Not
yet. We'll see. My results come out November 10th. So, you know, let's pray I pass. But anyways, he called me up and he goes, yeah, dude, you know, this is a case where I can use you. And so enough, you retained me and we made it happen. So the reason why I bring all that up is because there's just so much a lack of awareness or understanding of what cops' rights are. And that's throughout the nation. I don't think we get enough training for that. I don't think we have enough awareness or education to
That might be on purpose, right? You know?
Yeah, that could be. Absolutely.
Hey, bro, they want to keep you dumb sometimes. So they have the upper hand. I'll tell you a quick story. Guy goes, friend of mine, I want to try to get this as vague as possible. They have a command staff meeting. So the chief comes in and says, nobody's going to street cop training anymore. And without my approval. Yeah. So my friend raises his hand, and this is a real story. So it's because I know somebody else that works there too. They told me the same exact story. And he said, are you saying that what Dennis teaches, at the time it was just me, is incorrect? And the chief literally said, he told me this from two people. I heard this. No. What he said is actually right, except none of us know this stuff. And when we send our guys there, they come back smarter than us, and we can't have that shit. It's a real story, dude.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It goes to what I said earlier. Egos, man.
Oof. This guy had a revolving door. I mean, listen, not a bad agency pay-wise, location. They were losing, and small agency, maybe 30, 40 guys. They're losing 3-4 guys a year. That's like unheard of here. And oh, wow. There's never some self-reflection of like, what are we doing to cause this? It's like, well, fuck them. We'll just hire somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's a real bad way of looking at things. I always find it very comical that, look, you know, when people are quitting on you, there's a problem.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I don't care who you are as an employer. When people are quitting on you, quitting. I'm not talking about you have to terminate or separate ways, whatever it may be. I'm talking about people are quitting on you and in mass amounts. Something's very wrong, and it's probably the person who's in charge.
I had a commander when I first made sergeant 15 years ago tell me, look, Marlon, best, I'm not just a great mentor, but the best advice I ever got was, Marlon, listen, it's never about you. Don't make it about you. Keep your ego and your politics at the door, and you're going to turn out to be a great leader, you know, and he's right. He's absolutely right. And look, I can badmouth I am an IA alumni, you know, but I was also a defense rep, you know. And as much lack of, you know, transparency, you know, an IO, right, should have in internal affairs, you know, we're pretty good. I'll take my chances in our process. And, you know, I really do say it. I say that with the sense that we always try to get it right, especially at a Board of Rights. You know, the problem is that getting to that spot, it's just too many people, too many levels of review, too many want to weigh in. And like you said, man, they want to show off. And the other problem is with our system is that, and it's kind of funky because remember the Board of Rights process came from the Board of Inquiry process from the 1960s from the Navy. It was, I believe, Lieutenant Parker at the time. He decided to go to law school, was a JAG, and then he became chief in LA. And back in the 60s, said, you know what? There's fucking a whole bunch of corruption. You know what? I'm going to fucking have this process and try to make it fair and balanced, kind of low key. Let's not make it like a full blown civil trial. And see if we can do right, you know, by the officer, you know. But with that being said, the problem that I feel that's kind of funky is that you can select a command staff officer, a brand new promoted Captain One, and he's sitting there listening, right, to all these false statements and all these allegations, and he's thinking, oh, shit, man, if I find him not guilty, because I know the chief recommended removal, and you know what, I don't know, man, I might not get promoted. It's going to look bad on me. That's part of the problem.
It's terrible. It's a terrible system to be a part of at times.
I never wanted to admit that when I started doing my opening arguments, that it'll be fair. It'll be impartial. You know, what they're hearing and what I'm about to put on, because I am representing the chief of police. And that accused employee is being brought up on some serious charges. And I never thought up until like towards the end of my tour there that it was premature. You know, they, you know, talk about ex parte. You kind of knew, you know, you kind of knew. My last Board of Rights was a 28-year veteran, police detective that worked HIDA, you know, narco, major drug trafficking unit, task force. He got brought up on stealing money out of a scene of a search location. He really did. And it was one count. It was 10 days of hearings, Dennis. 18 witnesses, 54 exhibits, and my opening arguments were like close to an hour with like 48 PowerPoint slides. And I remember my boss telling me, he got found guilty. He did, you know, and
he did it.
Yes, he did it. He did it. It was circumstantial, but he did it. And my boss told me on my second day, you know, my lieutenant said he went into the office where the commander and the deputy chief were sitting, and they were going to shut it down. They actually said, this is a bunch of bullshit. You guys, you know what? We don't have it. We're not going to waste our time. And then my lieutenant, who was a lawyer, you know, he pretty much said, you know what? Pump the brakes, hold the phone. You got to let this play out. And we did. And look what happened. So, you know, it's got its effects.
Let me just be clear at the closing of this podcast. We'll do this again another time, Marlon. I 100% believe that accountability is important in law enforcement. I 100% believe it. Within reason of accountability, I don't think people should have their fucking heads hacked off for mistakes. I think that intentional misconduct should be obviously dealt with accordingly. But at the same time, I also feel like there's stuff that's not fair and impartial where these men and women are showing up to do this job against in the face of something that's not going to be fair on their part for doing their job the best way they thought they were. So there's got to be, like any other job and any other good boss, to at some point saying, like, we know you didn't mean harm here. We know that wasn't an intentional thing. We think we could just do this with a little bit of training so you can understand what you did wrong or what you did right. But unfortunately, the truth of the matter is, and that's why I advocate for the rights of cops, people don't realize that that's not often the case. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. I don't know what the averages would be. And that's the stuff that bothers me. It's the unfairness. And I think it's the stuff that bothers most people who are associated with this profession is how unfair this shit is at times. It really doesn't make any sense. And how could they possibly do this? Or, you know, and it's a sad state of affairs. And the cycle's never going to change, right? So from my position, I can say this all day. I am not I am not God. This will probably never change. What I can do is what I can do. I can hope to influence some places, some people, and continue to train to avoid certain situations, whether it's a legal situation or a physical harm situation. That's my contribution.
And my contributions, I want to be that voice too. And I truly, truly feel, now that I'm retired, you know, we need to get out there. You know, guys like me with this experience, I can share to all your, you know, your audience or your trainings where, hey, you know what? This is the kind of shit that, you know what? I've seen, I've witnessed, I've experienced, I've tried, you know, I've made a practical, you know, expertise in this. And you know what? If I can share just to make you aware and make you that much better and to make you understand, I'm all in, man. You know, I think it's so important. It really, really is.
Well, listen, brother, I'm going to, we'll do this again. We'll get you back on the board. We have more stuff to talk about. You could write notes for the next one, but I appreciate it. And hopefully people found value on this one because it is important. It's not talked about a lot. It's a taboo issue. I don't have any, look, man, I mean, there are people who do not like me because they don't want the secrets revealed. I think if this is a secret that's revealed, that it should be revealed and exposed, that like it's not fair and impartial. And I've seen it. I won't discuss it into great detail. And I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair to the guy who doesn't know anybody, and it's overly super fair for the guy who has connections.
Yep.
And then we pretend like we're this, you know, fair and impartial.
Fair and impartial organization. That's the worst.
It's just so ridiculous.
It is.
But anyway, I'm not somebody who's like, let's get them. Da, 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 right? No, but what about the guys who and girls who didn't do anything wrong and how they're getting served up? That's complete bullshit.
Well, you know,
and I just hear about it every single day. On DMs, on Instagram and Facebook about what this place is doing to them. I had one this morning, you know, and I'm like, dude, you gotta leave. You gotta transfer. Fortunately, if the guy's in a state where it's easy to move around.
Yeah.
New Jersey, it's not that easy to move around. But the state that he's in, he's like, yeah, I'm already looking at another agency. If they're treating you like this already,
it's time to go.
Yeah, you gotta go. You got like, don't stick around because they're gonna fire you. And once you're fired, now that makes your ability to go to another police department inherently almost impossible, not completely, but almost impossible. So if you're going to give them the opportunity, if you know, you have the target on your back or this agency is a place to not to be reckoned with, you're crazy for staying. People send me this message when they hear this. I heard the podcast. You said that. I'm the living example of I should have fucking left. I was scared. They fired me on some bullshit. And now my law enforcement career is over. Yeah. Don't leave yourself in that kind of vulnerable position.
Yeah.
To lose the yourself career that you want to do. Yeah. Move on. Right. Just move the fuck on.
Roger that, man.
All right, brother. Hey, it was great meeting you and seeing you. And we'll do this again and just contact Frankie and we'll get this thing rolled out.
Yes.
And I appreciate tremendously, brother. I got somebody sitting outside my door staring at me.
Dennis, the next thanks,
thing
brother.
To do.
I appreciate it.
Art Marlon. See you, man.
Take care.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.